Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates. We have everyone here, I think. Is that right?
Yes, you do.
Okay, very good. So this afternoon, what we're going to do is to continue our conversation with Sangha around insights that people are having around communication as a result of the fabulous email class that we're in the middle of. And I'm joined this afternoon by Chris and Kevin, who are here to assist with that. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, thank you, Jen.
And welcome, Chris.
Hi, Jen. Thank you.
Hey. So why don't we start with you, Chris? Maybe you could tell us what your favorite insights are around communication if you're doing the email class.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I think one of the most recent ones was from class 7 and doing the homework assignment, the recording and listening homework assignment, and really dropping in with a feeling that I had about a relationship, actually probably every relationship that I have, as I started going through all of the relationships in my life, seeing that there were some things that that I would really like to say, that I could really get to that place of sensing the feeling from being in that relationship. I think the first thing that I saw was how conditioning had kept me from communicating effectively. So perhaps something wasn't quite right, or there was some disappointment in there. And and it immediately went to blame that the other person was at fault. And that just throws me into the land of conditioning, right? And so blame for me would be something like conditioning does not like the way that I feel, and it's someone else's fault, like that.
Uh-huh.
So as soon as that was out of the way, then I was really just free to be with how I felt about. And there's usually an incident that would come to mind. And there would be some sadness and some sense of loss that was there, that kind of feeling. And then with that, there was also, it feels like something like a picture on the wall that's not quite straight, right? It feels a little, the energy feels, that was the image that was coming to mind with that. And the magic was, I really did want to straighten that picture out. I really did want to, or do want to, have that conversation.
Yeah.
So that was one really nice piece of it. The second one was that I felt fully capable of it. I felt fully like there was a widening out in the a gut feeling in the kind of the emotional center, a widening out of presence in that area, and that I could feel my way through a conversation, kind of a conversation where it might be difficult to say something to someone, or someplace where the energy is a little stuck, and I want to move in to see if that can be loosened up, like that. So.
It just feels like a changing kind of thing. And, Chris, as you're talking, I just was seeing how, there's that, we talk about that reassurance that of, I love you exactly the way you are, and I'll help you be however you want to be. And that I really hear that in what you saw in that process of, you realized there was something, there was kind of a condition thing that was getting in between you and other folks in your life. You said in this one particular relationship, but you suspect it's probably all over.
That
piece of conditioning kind of puts itself there. And that in that process of seeing it, it sounds like in a way you're already free. You're already out from under that piece of conditioning. And we could say, great, issue solved. It was an illusory problem. It's no longer. And at the same time, there really is a sense for, part of you that wanting to kind of metaphorically straighten that picture.
Yep.
And that we can do that. We can step back and assist the guy who wants to do that in doing that. Not because that's
yeah.
what's going to, you know, create the life experience he wants to have, not because that's going to fix everything, not because, but simply because he wants to do it. And you've already made the essential movement in that of stepping back and holding that guy in conscious, compassionate awareness.
Yeah, boy, that seems right on, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And part of that in beginning a conversation like that, it wasn't like I really needed to, well, having a place to start, I think, is helpful. But it wasn't like I needed a map for it. It felt like that gut level guidance could guide me through that conversation. Conversation will go, but there's this confidence that comes in about it doesn't matter where the conversation goes. If I'm in that place of compassion with me.
Yep. And it takes everyone off the hook, doesn't it? You know, no expectations, no needing anything from anyone in the situation. It's really, amazing. Well, thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Very fun. So, Kevin, we got a late start, but let's take a few minutes to look at what you see in around communication in the class.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. I'm just having a lot of opportunity recently to get some really close looks at the scrambler, the ego scrambler.
Uh-huh.
And just that the line, there was a line in the email class that just came out, about just kind of how the self-talk maintains the identity, which is then constantly interpreting everything and communicating only what will reinforce that identity or that ego structure. And just how brutal that is. How little chance there is to have any authentic connection or experience.
Yeah.
And you're not even receiving what's available from life.
Right.
Instead, you're receiving all this fictional, all this invented evidence to support this fictional story about life, and then there's this mad scramble to sort of like secure and defend whatever content will sort of protect that story.
Yeah.
It's just really brutal.
it is brutal. It's a perfect lock on, all the exits are blocked, basically, because everything is seen through that karmic lens, through that conditioned lens. And so, see, it's true, and I can't this, or I have to that, or, whatever the particular conversation is for each person.
Exactly. And my experience of it recently is that it's just like it's so locked down, as you say, that, it's so sort of bulletproof in its design that the communication seems to happen often from places of, like, assumptions and that just remain invisible because of that scrambler filtering what's being received and only presenting.
Yeah,
and I think how it works is so much is through emotion, it's through feelings, everything means something about me, or it means something about them, or it's going to mean something about me, and therefore there's a lot of pressure, and I better say it right, and
you just said something brilliant, Kevin, with that in terms of the it's all invisible, and that is so the reason, well, it's why we do awareness practice, right? But in particular, something like an email class where it gives us something very concrete to the image I just got of a scientist working in a petri dish where you put the dye into it so you can actually see the things that when you're just looking at it, you don't see them. They're just part of the thing. But when you add the dye to it, they suddenly pop up into relief and you can see, oh my gosh, well, no wonder this isn't going well. no wonder I'm constantly trapped in the same story because that story is constantly being reinforced. It's all the information I'm being fed is within that same story. So there actually is no communication happening. There might be talking, right?
Yeah,
there might be typing.
Lots of talking. Yeah, lots of talking. Yeah,
but no communication.
Right, no communication. My experiences of recently is with awareness is just getting closer and closer to sort of, it's clear after the fact. Oh, wow, that was all based in assumption or whatever it is. And then it's like, okay, I've seen through that. And then the whole thing repeats itself because it's invisible at the time, you know. So it's just in keeping with the practice, keeping with awareness and the tools and hoping to sort of close in on it in real time.
Yeah, and that's where it feels like the thank you comes in. So, because when we see, oh my gosh, that's what was going on there. If we train ourselves to the thank you, you know, thank you so much that I got to see that, that that awareness dropped in, that I was here, because obviously I was present in order to be able to receive that insight. And then in my experience, that's what helps us close in on the real time. You know, because we're training ourselves to that place of gratitude, which feels so good to be in, you know, and to be living from that place. It's who we are. And so it just naturally, without us kind of needing force it and effort and those sorts of things, we're training ourselves to be in the process that we want to be as life unfolds it for us.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful and very helpful.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. This has been incredibly fun. It kind of makes one want to just continue the theme for, I don't know, some months, because it seems endless what we could all see together as a Sangha about communication.
Thank you so much.
Yep. All right. Good night, Kevin.
Good night, Jen.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Chris. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm good. Hey, how are you? Last time we talked, you were still a little under the weather, and the throat was misbehaving or sending signals or something.
Yes, you have an excellent memory, and it all went away that evening, and the next morning I was fine.
Oh, marvelous. I just love that.
And
good.
I think our conversation had something to do with it.
Oh, good. That awareness stuff. It's good medicine, isn't it? Yeah.
It's great medicine. It's great medicine. Yeah, thank you for checking in.
Yeah, and I really appreciated I appreciate a lot of things I heard in that good news update. But the thing about coming back to thank you, oh, that's just such a huge part of it, isn't it?
Yes.
That when we see something, it doesn't matter how grim and grisly it is what we're seeing, if we can just keep in the front of our awareness that doesn't have anything to do with me. That's that ego maintenance system, and I just want to live in thank you, I saw it.
Yes.
Let it go and move on.
Seems like thank you just takes care of everything.
Just about. It doesn't it? It really does. when we teach people what gassho is, you know, my heart and your heart are one, and we say, you know, and it's kind of a one-size-fits-all communication. You know, it's thank you, yes, please, no, excuse me, whatever it is that we're trying to communicate, gassho does it. And thank you seems to do it for just every moment of life. Just thank you.
Yes. Brilliant.
Yeah, it really is.
I have some help here.
Okay, good.
Good time.
You did.
Reflective listening buddies is a powerful way to practice conscious, compassionate awareness and connect with another participant for weekly support.
Mm-hmm.
And registration is now open for the next session, and that begins on July 15th.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the email class, I find myself saying with some regularity about, especially the communication, email class, you know, use those facilitating skills. We can, that's where we can use those facilitation skills. And of course, then I think there are probably people out there going, what are you talking about? And Connected Listening Buddies is just a marvelous way to learn those skills and to get to practice them on a, as you say, on a weekly basis. It's
yes. Yeah.
Good. And once we get it down with this partner of ours, then we can take it into the rest of our lives and begin to practice those skills with everyone we know and really increase our odds of having the kind of communication and the kind of relationships that we long for.
Yes, yes. And since you mentioned the email class, I just have to say how wonderful and amazing it is. It's just been spectacular for me.
Oh, good, good. I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I've been loving it. And, of course, you know, we have our own experience, and we're really not sure what's going on. That's not completely true, because I can often tell at this time in the class that people are really, the transformation is happening. You know, they're in the,
Yes. Oh,
okay, and this is what I'm doing, and this is what I'm seeing. And, of course, you know, I live for that. It's a really good class. And this is, as with most things we do like this, it's the beginnings of a book on communication from the perspective of, from the perspective of awareness practice, which I think is going to be just, you know, helpful. Helpful. Let's just put it that way. We hope it'll be helpful.
Yeah, kind of like saving the world helpful.
Well, at least some relationships and some sanity and things like that. So that would be good.
Yeah. And the new retreat, in this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself, focuses on the importance of training in spiritual practice and offers a great location, fabulous food, and guidance with you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can register now for the retreat in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. That's August 31st through September 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And for these and other practice opportunities, visit schedule.livingcompassion.org. And the usual reminders today, if you would like to talk with Sherry, press *6 and then 1 to make cash show. And if you can focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes, that's great.
Thank you, Michael.
So you're welcome. Here we go.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry. Hey, Michael. It's Jodine in San Francisco.
Well, Hi. Hello, Jodine.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yes, I
oh,
can.
Good.
How you doing?
I have experienced a some kind of a turnaround in kind of a number of months of really struggling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange thing. I was sitting, and I was having just so many, like, I don't know, even like intrusive thoughts, almost. Mm-hmm. Like, I could not, I couldn't even get back to the breath.
Mm-hmm.
It feels
like an assault, right? If I may, in Zen you'll often hear people talk about wandering thoughts, you know, and we know those wandering thoughts where, you know, there's this and oh, that reminds me of that, and maybe it drops in to, you know, you need to go to the post office for, you know, wandering thoughts. And then there's the assault where it just it can feel personal, like the mind has decided to attack and be sure that you do not, as you say, make it to the breath, have a moment of peace. It's an assault.
Mm-hmm.
Just to let you know you're not alone in that one.
Right. I was going to say, I get it that you know what that's like.
Yes. I've had it happen a few times.
And actually, I participate in a 12-step group as well as our Sangha. And in the 12 steps, there's a concept of powerlessness. And I literally, I was like, okay, you know, at this moment, I'm powerless over this.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked to my altar, which at this moment, when I'm meditating, I have a picture of my father who recently passed away, mm-hmm. and a light, a little tea light,
mm-hmm.
that so that I'm sitting with my dad every day. And I basically said, Dad, help me.
Mm.
Like, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And by some grace, I got up from my meditation and I went outside to my garden. And it was like I was really there. Like, I was really present. I was really seeing. Everything that was there for the first time in months,
mm-hmm.
you know, without that attack, you know, without that attack, like following me wherever mm-hmm. I'm going, whatever I'm doing. And so I've just been, I've never really, this is kind of a new experience for me of something like many months of depression or whatever it is that I get trapped in, seeming to just turn around.
Yeah. Yeah. So shall I give you a Zen translation of that experience?
Sure.
Because you know, people will often ask me about the 12 steps, and what I tell them is it's obviously an incredibly useful program for a lot of people, but the piece of it that troubles me is surrendering to a higher power, and because it is fundamentally in opposition to what the Buddha taught, which is not that there is a higher power that we are in relationship to, a creator to whom we petition for whatever. That which animates is us. So when people ask me about why don't Buddhists believe in God, what I'm likely to say is it's not that we don't believe in God. We don't believe there's anything that isn't God. And what that does is take us out of the world of duality, where this is and that isn't. And so I project that what happened to you in that experience is that you surrendered ego. You said, without saying it, ego cannot do this. I cannot any longer look to ego to be all right, to make it through. Ego can't make it through. And in that moment of surrender, that which animates you, that thou art, was your experience. And as you say, you saw things as if for the first time, certainly for the first time in months. You were present, and what you weren't present through was an ego filter. You were directly present to life as it is. And I don't have to tell you that that's where we want to live.
Yes, I mean, yes. I can't even put words. I guess it's that nirvana and samsara are one idea.
Yes.
Because
or reality, as you just experienced. Right? You experienced the reality of that. Because nothing in your life changed in that moment. But you were present to life as it is. Nirvana. A true experience of thy will be done. Or as we like to say in Zen, whatever.
It's I'm really grateful for your words because the experience was something that, you know, I could try to put some words on it, but but yeah, words fail me at the moment.
Yeah.
So
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that I'm grateful for the recordings because I think it'll do my heart good to hear our conversation again, but I think the biggest gratitude is that I have continued to practice, and that Sangha has been there for me over and over and over through the difficulties I've been going through, and so I was there when that dropped in.
Yes. Yes, exactly so. And you know, Jodine, I know the difficulties you've been going through, and there's nobody on this planet who wouldn't agree those are worthy difficulties, right? Those are give up, throw in the towel, I can't take it another minute difficulties. But what you did is to say, I can't do this. And in that letting go, into life, into the acknowledgement that you are ready, you are willing to let your, in quote, self go. All of the support, all of the love, the compassion, the kindness, the strength that you need is there. And that's what each of us is required to do. Now, in the perfect spiritual world, we would do that moment by moment by moment by moment. But life actually doesn't demand that of us. Lovely if we get there, then we become somebody like a Rumi, right? Where you know that he...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, where you know he was just spinning around in ecstasy all the time. He was doing that moment by moment by moment, right? It wasn't a leaving the moment and coming back to it. It seemed like that was just the reality that he inhabited, that we can project that onto the Buddha. We can project it onto Jesus and individuals who have just completely transcended ego identity. But what the rest of us mortal types, we at least have to do it once so that we see for ourselves, we experience what this is about. Because then we know that what we are encountering, it that is causing us to struggle, what we're suffering over, is that which would choose to be against life. Now, there aren't really good words for that either, but that experience that you had of the assault, the attack that seems to just come at a person when we're most vulnerable, but kind of it's almost like going in for the kill, right? And of course, sadly, a lot of people will succumb at that point, will give up, but not in a giving up into life, but a giving up on life.
Oh, yeah.
But when we give up into life, what we realize is nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. All those things we thought mattered just don't. Because one day, we're going to have the opportunity to go home. And it's really beyond a blessing, beyond anything we can put into words, as you've noticed, that we know where home is, and we have a pretty solid sense of what it feels like to go there. Yeah.
Thank you.
You keep taking good care of yourself, huh?
I will.
And thank Dad, would you? Thank Dad. He came through in a really big way, didn't he?
Every day, definitely.
Yeah.
I want to leave you with something my husband said when I was trying to describe I said that a miracle happened. And he said, Rumi says, don't try to describe the miracle, just kiss me on the lips.
Beautiful, huh?
So,
yeah.
Thank you. Thanks.
You're so welcome.
That. Thanks for everything. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jodine.
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. And we have another call here, Sherry.
Okay.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Michael. My name is Brad. I'm calling from Maryland.
Hello, Brad. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to tell you, for starters, that that was some of the most beautiful words I've ever heard in my life, what you just said. I was very touched by it. I know, mind you, that's a projection on my behalf, but what I just heard really resonated with me, so thank you for that.
Good.
Zen has been such a wonderful thing since I've really begun to practice, and I've been practicing diligently for the past year and a half. It's changed my life. I'm recording and listening. I've been using a Zen coach up until about a week ago because money's a little tight at the moment, and I was calling you in regards to, now I know it's not about content, it's about process, but one of the things that always gets to me is my level of fitness, keeping my weight under control, and I'm sure it's something that many of your listeners deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I had such a great period last year of where I was truly finding a middle path. I wasn't expecting a miracle out of myself, but I was consistently exercising, and I was seeing changes like I had not seen in 15 to 20 years, all because I was taking a compassionate approach to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've become identified again with this side of me that says that, you're not, you know, somehow you slipped out of what you were doing as you always do. It'll be hard to get back there again. And that same side to me is the side that then wants me to eat the bad stuff and make the
bad
decisions.
It's the devil, ain't it?
Well, the mentor tells me, he goes, well, and the mentor in the most unjudgmental way says, you realize what that is. Is that is your ego spawning you to do that and then creating an identity against those actions that it's making you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Any guidance?
The only thing, Brad, I would say about that, Brad, is that it's not your ego. Don't take it on. Don't take it on. It's not. It's a parasite. So, it's a virus. So we approach it that way rather than it's me, it's mine, because, again, if you went out and you caught something, you know, now you've got a virus. Well, that same virus would want to blame you and figure out what you did wrong and why this and why that and why something else. But the reality is, it's just how it is. You didn't do anything wrong. And it's your responsibility to take really good care of yourself under every circumstance. But what happens to us is not something that we need to be blamed for. Even the karma of the eating and the weight and all of that, that really doesn't have anything to do with you.
No. And, you know, it nags at me. I want to enjoy my summer. I'm taking care of a 2-year-old boy. I think I'm doing a pretty good job at it. I've done so much to relieve my suffering. And it reminds me about how you talk about how the Buddha said that maybe he was referring to that dissatisfaction you have of where something just isn't right. And I think of that, and I'm like, God, if I could just not deal with this. It's just a slight nagging at this point that's keeping me from just enjoying life completely.
That's right. Now, and it's that same dissatisfaction, I would project, that causes you to eat the stuff that you really actually in a lucid moment don't want to eat.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, it's that hungry ghost emptiness that, go ahead, have that, go ahead.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, go ahead. You want it, you know you do.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah. So you're taking care of a 2-year-old?
My son, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, then, Brad, here's the deal. This is really perfect. So has he discovered sugar yet?
Well, I'm doing my best, and here's that's an interesting thing about all of it. I noticed me projecting my issues with that onto him, and he has discovered sugar at this point. And I can see my projection onto him in regards to when he's eating it and when he is not. And then that also creates a delicate balance with my wife, because she's doing things to take care of herself through her own way of being. And she knows that Zen's the thing for me. So, yeah, he has discovered sugar. It's
okay,
a little
challenging
with that.
Yeah, here's the deal, because it's the same thing with it's the same thing with both of you, right? It's not as developed in him as it is with you, but it's the same thing. He's on the track, right? And so he's discovered sugar, and he, I mean, sugar tastes really good. Who wouldn't want to eat it all the time? But you're not going to let him do that, because it wouldn't be good for him.
Right.
That it's as simple as that. So the same exact rules apply to you. And you're going to be, I'm hoping, in exactly the same relationship with this guy we call Brad as you are with that little boy. Because it's really the same process. Both of those people need a solid, conscious, compassionate, present presence to assist them to make good decisions for themselves.
I cannot begin to tell you how much this practice has helped change it around for me since he was born. It's beyond words.
Yeah.
To be on the path of waking up and ending suffering is a huge thing. To take responsibility for yourself is just beyond words.
Yes, and you are going to move into that conscious, compassionate awareness to take care of the man and the boy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because the man actually can't take care of the man or the boy.
Right.
Right? But conscious, compassionate awareness can take care of both of them. And that's what you, we have to do little quote marks in the sky here, that's what you have the opportunity to be and offer. And so the only time anything becomes a problem for any of us is when we go unconscious. And that then becomes our huge, our huge motivation not to go unconscious, because we don't want these people to suffer the consequences that they would suffer if we were to go unconscious and not be there to care for them.
Well, one last quick question. In regards to when I do go unconscious, when those times come up that I still slip up, the real pitfall from there is if I have a chance, that's when ego and conditioning will say, aha, now I can identify you to the fact that you didn't do what you're supposed to do. And if you can believe it, I'm going to pull you in and I'm going to let you have it. And
that's right. That's where, and that's where you say, oh, before it starts, oh, thank you, okay,
yeah,
I'm here, I'm back, I'm back, thank you, and just keep saying thank you until they can't get a word in edgewise.
Because none of that actually does it. None of it helps. Doing it doing it. You know, as you say, one process does not lead to another.
No,
the drama has nothing to do with it.
No, in fact, it is the cause. It's why people drink. It's why people overeat. It's why people want to go unconscious to try to get away from that, from those voices, from that suffering.
Right.
So we're staying conscious so it doesn't get a toehold. And do we go unconscious? And sure, of course. It's a process. That's what we're doing. It's not about being right. It's not about doing it right. We're waking up.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah. All of that other stuff is the world of karmic conditioning, and we just don't have anything to do with it. Well, you did that wrong. Well, actually, I didn't. I fell asleep. It's not wrong. I was just asleep.
Right.
Yeah.
Sherry, thank you so much. Michael, thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
And I'm coming to the retreat in Pennsylvania, and I really look forward to seeing you guys.
Great. All right.
See you
there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Brad. You're listening to Open Air. And Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, it's Jeffrey in New York City.
Well, hello, Jeffrey. How are you?
Hello there. I am doing wonderfully well, and that's what I wanted to talk about tonight.
Well, good. That's okay.
Good.
You can do that.
But it's really interesting. Well, it's interesting to me because the email class was so helpful, and when you were talking a few weeks back about not leading a more comfortable, ego-centered life,
mm-hmm.
it sort of all converged for me because I didn't realize how challenging having a lot of blessings and a wonderful life would be.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, I was so used to being like the starving artist, basically, the suffering, like not making it and struggling in relationships and all of that stuff. And the email class helped to open up a lot of things, and the next few months seem really exciting. But beyond that, it, you know, the recognition that now is really wonderful and exciting.
Uh-huh.
Is kind of an, it feels like an edge for conditioning.
Yes. Well, an edge for you, right? Conditioning, not...
Yeah.
Yeah, if we understand, I think we're saying exactly the same thing. Conditioning is right there looking for whatever edge it can push you over, right?
Yeah.
And so for you, it is, and for anybody under the circumstances, it's staying conscious through the time, the good times.
Mm. Yeah, and this so much gratitude arises because I can see that the suffering comes now, or at least the practice place now is not getting confused that I am conditioning.
Yes. Yes.
So it was, at a certain point, it was, you know, the content is the problem. It's your life, it's your job, it's your whatever, whatever, whatever. But now it's like, oh, yes, the practice place is not getting confused about what's what.
Yes. Yes. And of course, you know, that argument, that place that people get so stuck because it is karma. If you had the right this, the right that, the right that, the right that, then you would be happy. You're not happy because you don't have the right this, the this, and this, the this, right? So it's just a loop that people mm-hmm. get in, and they believe it. They believe it, right? Then, of course, what happens is people do get the things that they want. Very often, they're not happy, right? They may be happy for a while.
Yes.
But the happiness is not a result of content. So, you know, if I always wanted my own private jet, and I got one, of course I'm going to be happy. But is that the happiness that lasts a lifetime? No, because I'll get tired of having my own jet, or it'll break or crash or some damn thing. And then, of course, I need the next thing and the next thing and the next thing and the next thing because we're feeding hungry ghosts, right? And
yes.
their appetite is insatiable. So can I be happy and then just enjoy whatever the content of my life is. That's the challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and with recording and listening and having practiced for a while, I can be happy.
Mm-hmm.
But the supports are there.
Mm-hmm.
And the, you know, I could see as it was becoming clear that things, wonderful things were happening, I could see that in a way it was supposed to, the quote, you know, supposed things I've always wanted to happen seem about to happen, or some of them are already happening. And it's supposed to, I don't know how to phrase this, but I'm supposed to self-destruct, basically, go with conditioning, compensate in whatever way for not having that actually bring me happiness,
mm-hmm.
you know, and start mm-hmm. all these patterns that I never thought would become the edge or the challenge place.
Right, right, because we believe what karma says. We believe what conditioning says, right? So if it says, you will be happy when, then what we believe is that what's true is what finishes that sentence.
Yeah.
But if I'm in a process of I'll be happy when, the thing I can know is I will never be happy.
Yeah, because it's just a never-ending, I'll be happy when. Yeah.
That's right. When is always out. It's like tomorrow. It's always out there. And so, yes, to, you know, that old, just, you know, for a while, you heard it everywhere about, you know, the old Chinese guy with one son. And I don't know if he had a horse or he didn't have a horse. But anyway, a horse came in to their place and everybody said, oh, isn't that wonderful? Now you have a horse. And the old guy said, well, maybe yes, maybe no. And then the son tries to break the horse and he gets thrown off and breaks his leg. And everybody said, oh, isn't that awful? Well, maybe yes, maybe no. And then, you know, and it goes on and on and on, making the point that, in fact, we never know. What we think is wonderful may not be. What we think is a tragedy may not be. We don't know. Mm. But if we're just present, having the life experience we choose, then the content technically doesn't matter.
Yeah, the happiness is in, the happiness is in maybe yes, maybe no.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, well, it's all going my way. Isn't that great? Yes, it's great. Nothing's going my way. Isn't that great? Yes, it's great.
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. And being able to have those private moments with life, being able to have those connections with the mentor, no matter how big or whatever, however the energy gets in life, that is, you know, or however small or depressing or upsetting or whatever it is, actually whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead. Was there more?
No, that was it.
Okay. So I wanted to introduce another aspect of it that I think you started out looking at. I project you were looking at. And that is something that sounds so religious. It's almost creepy. Okay. I'm going to say it anyway. And that is the importance of devoting our lives to something bigger than ourselves.
Yes. Well, I could, as things are happening, I can see that this is not about me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the calling. That sounds religious too.
Oh yes. So well,
That's the thing is that it's not about me, and it seems like I'm being asked to step forward and step up in a very expansive way.
Mm-hmm.
And not about me, I mean, it's not about conditioning. It's not about the ego things, the wants and all that. Mm-hmm. And then if I tried to do what I'm doing but hold on to those ego things, that that would be part of the tension and part of the destruction and part
That's
of suffering.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And we can sense that. Because, you know, people get very concerned about spiritual types or religious types being ego identified. And what I always, my response always is, well, if that's the case, it won't work. We don't need to worry about people taking advantage of life. We don't need to worry about it, because that's not, as far as I can tell, how karma works. So if I'm doing something with a closed fist and a greedy mind, then that's what I'm living. It doesn't matter what it looks like to anybody else. It doesn't even matter how conscious I may or may not be about that. That is what I'm living. And, of course, conversely, right? The other side of that is true. If what you're doing is being done with an open, generous heart, then, again, it doesn't matter what it appears to be like or what other people are projecting or anything else. That's the life that you're living. You're living an open-hearted, grateful life. And from that open-hearted, grateful place, of course, whatever happens, happens, and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a feeling that it's happening to us. It's not a separate, alone, lonely.
That's right. Life is unfolding. People get confused and think it's my life unfolding for me. Mm-hmm. But that's confusion. Life is unfolding. In each and every moment, that which is manifests in form. I was just writing that in the email class, you know, that Zen thing of not one and not two. It looks like multiplicity, but it's actually one. Life manifests all.
Yeah, and that was a really valuable thing in one of the really valuable things about the email class is that sort of middle person conditioning, interpreting what's happening in the communication stream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of multiplicity that I'm practicing not going with.
Yes. 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 The self and other type.
Yeah, this sort of conditioning, communicating with me.
Mm-hmm.
As weird as it sounds, you know, stepping into the stream of life and telling me what's happening.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if you're old enough to remember or if it was ever a part of your life, but I always call that Howard Cosell. You know, it's the sports announcer who is telling you what you just saw.
Yes.
And if you're not paying close attention, you don't realize how much spin there is on what you're being told. And after a while, a lot of people forget to just pay attention to what they're seeing and listen to the narrator instead. Again, failing to see that there's a spin on all of it.
Yeah, it feels like a difference between playing the game and listening on the radio in your car.
Yeah. People think it's safer to listen in the car, but it's actually not. It's really the most dangerous way. And playing is ever so much more fun.
Yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
In touch, huh?
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
Great to hear your voice, Jeffrey.
Mm-hmm. Have a good night.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for joining us, Jeffrey. And Sherry, I think we have time for at least one more caller here.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Megan, from used to be from the Bay Area, but now in Michigan.
Well, hello, Megan from Michigan. How are you?
How are you?
It has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
It does. Megan, a little bit of a rhyme. Yeah, it kind of goes along.
Yeah. What's going on?
And with first of all, because of the time change, I get to, instead of trying to make dinner and do all that stuff for the little ones, I get to be on this call, which is great. I didn't always get to have the opportunity in California. So that's really nice. So I wanted to take advantage of that. And I wanted to mention two things. One was a big thank you for the added virtual sitting times for the sitting groups.
Uh-huh.
And that and just the way that they're set up, because they've just been so wonderful, especially I have a really little one in my life, and so there was a little bit more sleep deprivation that was going on. So it was, I could feel sometimes, you know, urgency can be one of the bigger pulls for me, especially with sleep deprivation going on at times.
Oh, gosh.
So,
Right? Oh, gosh, so, yeah. I mean, I was just chuckling because I'm thinking about those, you know, those very special sleep-deprived meditations where, wow, I actually sat up through the entire thing. So that's good.
Uh-huh.
I'm right
amazing.
There.
Yeah. And so I was... it was just the way that the facilitator was doing the daily recollection, in the way that we've always done it, in the way that's always done in the monastery. But it was so great. It right there just brings you right to okay. Slow down. I am no longer listening to urgency from conditioning. I'm here, and what a gift. So I'm just putting a little plug in and letting you know, just saying if anybody to just take advantage, because there's lots of them now. There's like 8 or 9 different times. So and especially if you're not in the state anymore or close,
right?
It's just
close
a nice
by
way to
anybody,
connect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So three things about that, if I can remember what they are, Megan, three things about that.
Okay.
One, we can thank Ashwini for this. She's the one who put that whole thing together and make sure that it stays going for us. And two, I'm going to ask the facilitators who are going to hear this to please take it to heart and realize exactly what you say, how meaningful it is for people who are not close to Sangha to be able to have that opportunity. And then I think the third one was just to ask the facilitators to step up and be sure to, you know, take one of those times, because it is a tremendous support for people. And I personally am really glad to hear you say that, because I don't actually know about these things. You know, unless somebody says, as you're saying, this is really helpful, this is really meaningful, we don't necessarily know that people are enjoying it. So I really appreciate you letting us know that.
Yeah, it was. I was recognizing that sometimes there's so many. I mean, I feel so grateful that we have so many different practice opportunities, and and then sometimes because there's so many, you know, they might not always get airtime. You know, and I was just every Wednesday I'm doing it, and I'm like, wow, I'm so grateful. So I really want to let, you know, people know how grateful I am and to hope and you know, to know to just keep being open to what you know, we can do to keep supporting Sangha and these kinds of things.
Yeah, supporting one another. And keeping in mind that we have a lot of Sangha in different circumstances. You know, and a lot, I mean, people all over the world, you hear if you listen to Open Air, regularly. Yeah. You know, that people are calling in from all over the world, but primarily England, Europe, in the middle of the night. So,
yes.
You know, when we offer these things, to just realize how many people are in different places, different time zones. Some have little people. Some are taking care of older people. Some, we have a lot of Sangha who are, not a lot, fortunately, but a fair number who are housebound or even bedridden. And so these kinds of practices that just come right into your house, where you are, they're really, really important.
And that, you know, I mean, it's really sweet just to even hear there are 3 people on this call, you know, for the sitting. Okay, you know. And, of course, there's others that you know, there are other people may not be on that call, but they're sitting. Like, there's always, you know, we're always sitting together. But it's just a really kind way to support ourselves and to show up. I mean, it's just another way to show up for this being, then suffering, and to support others in that too. So I want to say thank you for that. And also thank you too, also for the email class. It's been amazing, and I have gotten to, if I get to just practice, and there's so many things we get to practice, but if I get to practice even this last assignment of just pausing to ask those 3, you know, is this kind, and is this necessary, and is this true? And just being able to look at all of that, right, you know, from you know, from our practice standpoint in our place, is just what a gift. And and how many times was that just not even available to me to say, but that was okay. Like, I came back and looked at it again. So just again, I'm just feeling really flowing with gratitude. So thank you for that.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so very glad. It's wonderful. And again, it's a great reminder for all of us and an inspiration. I actually, while we were talking, Megan, a text came in from Ashwini saying, actually, Janet and Chris are the ones doing all of the work. So, again, you know, gosh, I don't know these things. So I'm really glad you said that. I'm really glad I found that out. I'm really glad that I get an opportunity to thank the people who are, you know, we have a lot of Sangha behind the scenes making all of these things happen. It is such a team effort. It's wonderful. Well, I guess we could say it's Sangha. I think that's what the Buddha had in mind when he suggested that we would be well served to practice together.
Yes, and you can see that everywhere in the practice, and it's just for those moments when conditioning wants to come in and say, you know, you are all alone, or you can't do this, or you, whatever, you know, all it wants to do, it wants to shut everything down. It's like, no, this is not true. It's every, you know, we're everywhere, and life is everywhere, and we're getting to support each other and have life living through us to support life, you know, and you can't, I mean, the truth is, I mean, look at all our practice supports and everything. I mean, it's undeniable. So anytime, you know, you just all have to do is get the recording, you know, the recorder, you know, get on the website, do anything, go to the recording listening website, go do anything. And it's all right there to just say, you're a lying liar, conditioning. So
you're a lying liar, and I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
That's right. I'm just dropping this right now. So,
and you know, one other thing about it, I was launching on this earlier today, and it's kind of what we talk about all the time, I guess, but it really is true that the best way for us to know that, what you're saying, is to participate. Because if we listen to the UUU and we isolate, then that is our life experience. But when we participate, then, as you say, we know that what those voices say is not true, because it's our experience. We're participating. We know that there are all of these other people participating, and so we're not alone. and we know that we're not isolated, and you know, that's the beauty and the benefit. So
it is. It just keeps on deepening and expanding. You know, like you get to keep seeing more and more of those layers. You know, you get into the ego gets the discomfort, and you get to push that edge and delve into even more rich, awesome experience. Yeah, that's awesome.
Push right through to the other side.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad
Thank
those
so
babies
much.
Are in bed and you're able
I
to
know.
Call in. Great to hear
Me
from
too.
You. Take
yes,
good care of
Yes, I will
yourself.
Be calling in more, too. I will.
Good.
Thank you, and you, too.
All right.
Okay.
Good. Thanks,
Take
Megan.
Care.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Megan. And we come to the end of another open air, Sherry.
Don't we have a great Sangha?
We have a great Sangha, and I have to say, words are failing me just like they're failing everybody else tonight. Because
we just walk around and grin and say thank you. It seems to me that's what we're left with, just grinning and thank you.
Grin and
gratitude. All right. Talk to you soon, huh?
Yes. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. Good night.
Good night.